Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Project Empowerment with Kathleen, a show dedicated to empowering lives everywhere by bringing you people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help each of us make our world a better place. And if you wish to participate during today's show, please log into the chat room at projectempowerment.info, or you can also call in with your questions at area code 347-945-5441. And today I'm super excited to have back on my show author Mark Allen to discuss his wonderful and beautiful new book, Tantra for the West, A Direct Path to Living the Life of Your Dreams. Now, Tantra is usually thought of as sex and some kind of mysticism thrown in, but Mark Allen explains that it is actually a highly practical and multifaceted wisdom tradition for improving every aspect of your life. So in his new book, The Whole Life, Work, Money, Creativity, Food and Drink, Solitude, Meditation, Healing and Aging, Freedom, Enlightenment, and yes, sex and relationships. His new book contains brilliant spiritual and beautiful insights that will help readers find their own direct path to happiness, love, inner peace, abundance, power, employment, fulfillment, enlightenment, and whatever the heart's desire. And I'm super excited to have on Mark. He's written several books besides Tantra for the West, The Magical Path, The Greatest Secret of All, Visionary Business, and others. He's an internationally renowned seminar leader, entrepreneur, author, and composer. He's also co-founder of New World Library with Shakti Gawain and has guided the company as president and publisher from a small startup to its current position as a major player in the independent publishing world. He leads seminars in Northern California, gives teleseminars that reach people all over the world. And you can visit his website at markallen.com, that's MarkAllen, or New World Library. And I just want to get him on the line here and welcome him to the show. Hello, is this Mark?
Yes, hi, Kathleen.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. In Seattle, it's going to be a cooker, so we're getting
good.
Ready for it.
Good. That's unusual.
I know, right? Yeah, well, you know, one summer we had, I think, 80 days with no rain.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. People think it rains all the time here. It does not.
Mm-hmm.
It could be very warm. So wonderful.
Great.
So thank you so much for joining me today. I thoroughly enjoyed your book. Of course, I loved your other book too when you were on my show on The Magical Path.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep it on my nightstand as a reference. So it's wonderful. And then for your newest one, I'd really love to dive in and just find out. So what was the inspiration for writing it? Because it's so rich and so full of so much good stuff. So
yeah.
What was the creative spark for that one?
It was really the first big book I ever wrote in my early 30s. And I'd published it over 30 years ago. And then And it did well at first, and then after about 15 years, it went out of print. And so we've had all kinds of requests recently for an ebook version of it or some version of it, and people remember it. So I went through it and totally revised and rewrote every word and updated it, and I think made it even more direct and succinct, and it's a lot briefer in some ways. I've the older I get, the clearer I see it. The original inspiration for the book goes back to my early 20s when I left the university. I was at my mental, physical, and emotional low. I was in really bad shape physically. I'd taken way too much crystal methadrine to get through the university.
Wow.
I had these long periods of depression, which now that I look back on it is totally natural. I see why, because you take all this crystal methadrine, you go up, and what goes up must come down. It was my body like trying to balance out my system. But I had these periods of depression and this ongoing anxiety. Something was not right with me or the world, but I couldn't nail it down. And really it was my anxiety that forced me to go on the winding path I did through my 20s, where I ended up in a Zen center for about 6 months, which was very healing for me physically, a lot of meditation. And then I wandered around, and I spent about 3.5 years then at a Tibetan center in Berkeley, California. Mm-hmm. And I knew there was something really valuable there from Tibetan Buddhism, which he called Tantra. It's Tantric mm-hmm. Buddhism, the path of Tantra, a direct path. And he kept, but I kept, after 3.5 years, thinking, I have not adapted this well to my life in America. It needed to be radically adapted to change from the culture of Tibet to the culture of America, which are so different cultures, obviously. And so I left the Tibetan center, and I spent about 3-4 years. It started first as just notes to myself. And one of the very first things was a poem I wrote called Notes to Myself, which is in the book. It's simply, don't reject the sadness, don't reject the sorrow, don't reject the suffering and the pain. Blessed are these things, for through them we come into true understanding of our way. And that was the beginning of Tantra for the West. I kept making notes, and I kept reflecting on every area of my life, how these great teachings I'd gotten at the Tibetan Center studying Tantra affected every moment of my life.
Mm-hmm. Like
he told one story that really helped me understand what he meant by the tradition of Tantra. He said, mm-hmm. we're all on a path up a mountain. Whether we know mm-hmm. it or not, we're all on a path, a spiritual mm-hmm. path. And across the mountain are growing patches of weeds. And in Tibetan, the word for poisonous weeds, like poison ivy, or the word for poison is the same as the word for so-called negative emotions, anger, fear, envy, jealousy, greed. They're poisons. They're considered to be poisons affecting our body. So we're all on a path, and we all encounter poisons across this path. Well, there's different types of people, he said. The first is the monk or the nun. And they come up the path, they see the poison, and they immediately go the other way. And that's a perfect path for the monk or the nun. Just deny,
right.
go the other way. About sexuality, just avoid it. Okay, that's one legitimate path. But it's not for most of us, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the path of the awakening being, the meditator, the bodhisattva. The bodhisattva comes, see the poison, and plows right through the poison and goes up the path to the top of the mountain, to his or her own awakening, and then their ongoing contribution to the awakening of everyone in the world. That's a wonderful path. Then the path of Tantra, he said. The tantric yogi comes up the path, sees the poison, and immediately goes into the center of the poison, even though it apparently takes him or her off their path.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about that and reflected on that, I thought, that's it. That's what he was trying to say. It is the path of every moment. We're on a path every moment, and we can look at every moment of our life as part of our spiritual path. He had one great exercise where he took us all down to the basement. There was no windows. We all sat around in a circle, and he said, okay, imagine your mother has just died, and she's laying right there in the center of this circle. How do you feel? And we spent a couple hours really exploring that grief.
Mm.
Most of us were in our 20s, and our parents were alive and vital. We hadn't even thought of that. But that's what he was teaching us. It's the practice of every moment. It's not just when you're meditating, or just doing yoga, or just at church, or just this or that particular moment. It's every moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and it, first of all, thank you for revising this book, because it, for me, it was new. It was such. I personally really enjoy your work. It's refreshing, and it's light, and it feels like you feel inspired to want to do things differently in your life because the way you're writing it, it feels like it's going to be okay. It's gentle. It's comforting. And I just want to express that to you because I feel it's like it's a safety thing. You know, I think I've shared with you in the past, you know, I grew up in an abusive family. My first ex-husband tried to kill me. I mean, I had this horrible, horrible abuse, and I found Shakti's book, Creative Visualization, at a library, and I memorized it and would... You know, I read it over and over and over, and I give that book credit for me slowly crawling out of my depression and my fear to save my own life. And I fled for my life, and I lived in a shelter for battered women. And I used the exercises. I wrote in a journal. I did all of these things to help pull myself out of that situation.
Right.
And so it's like when I read your work, it's like I love how it's, how you write it to where a person doesn't feel like they have to do it this way. This is the only way. This is like the only method that works because it's my method. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. And yes, I totally avoid that because every one of us is unique. So I feel like the book is this big banquet in a way of,
yeah,
everything I've ever tried, and I say, try this, see if it works for you. If not, that's fine. Try this. If not, that's fine. And whatever I offer, I also encourage people to change it. Change something. Make it yours completely.
And that's the beauty of it. And it's such a beautiful gift to know that you have that that ability to make that happen. I have the chat room open, and I have a gentleman on here. I think it's a gentleman. It's Missionary Wycliffe is the name on here. And they have a question for you. They're writing from Kenya, Africa. And they said, because the show is international and he's rich in information, referring to you, and delighted and detailed ideas and knowledge, is it possible in any way that Kenya, Africa be empowered and we can have him over? Sounds like you're being invited to Africa.
Boy, that's why I love the internet, because I don't have to travel. But, I mean, if something was organized, my wife is always encouraging me to travel more. If something was organized, I'd be... this is the first time I've been invited to Kenya. I've been invited to nearly everywhere else, I think. But if something was organized, I'd entertain it. He could email me or contact my company.
Oh, goodness, yeah. He says, can we host him Africa for a coaching training conference for leaders and communities? You know, this is so powerful, because I hope for Missionary Wycliffe, I hope you get a copy of this book if you haven't already, Tantra for the West, because, you know, Mark, you go through just that topic on religion and politics and people and community, and it is so powerful. And let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's talk especially the politics. I just recently just finished reading that section in the book. That is such a hot topic. I mean, people go quite literally crazy over if you share anything that's different from what they believe or value. They go ballistic sometimes, or they think you're the horrible person. I've been attacked on the internet from something I had shared that I thought it was an interesting view, and because it was so radical and so different, and these two people were so offended because I shared something that was so outside of their comfort zone that they verbal, you know, through Facebook, they attacked me. And I'm thinking, wow, how attached people are to their beliefs. So let's discuss that, please, if we can, about how this Tantra for the West can be helpful for just in that area alone.
Even in your question, you've touched right on the core of the problem there, because, I mean, I quote, who was it? I forget, but some brilliant person said, you know, we just need to be able to listen to other people who have different points of view. The key. That's the key to world peace, to realize we all have a different point of view. The Native Americans always sat in circle in council, and they said, you know, anything you place, any object you place in the center of that circle, everyone around the circle literally sees it differently. They literally see a different side of it. And that's who we are as people. We will see things differently, and that's just the way it is. So we just need to learn to listen to each other, to realize we're one big dysfunctional family here on Earth, and we have to learn to get along. How do you get along? By respecting each person. Just because they're alive, they deserve respect. Respecting everyone and being able to listen to their point of view. Take it in without denying, defending, putting them down or putting yourself down. Just take it in and then talk to them. Negotiate. That is the key to world peace, to be able to negotiate with each other with respect so that and once you can sit down and negotiate, you can work it out so each side gets what they need. You can work out win-win agreements. So it's the same principles for running a successful business, for running a successful country, and for having a world with global peace. It's respect and negotiation.
Boy, and that alone right there, I mean, that's what they teach us in kindergarten, but that's the hardest one, I think, for people.
Yes, we have on our refrigerator, Mom was right, fighting doesn't solve anything.
Right. You are so right. So our person from Kenya has actually called in. Are you okay with if we accept the call for a minute or so?
Sure.
Okay, let's go ahead and take the call.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. How are you? Did I lose you there? Did we lose you? I think we lost them. Hello? I think I lost you. Hello? I can't hear anything. Hello?
Hi, sorry about that.
Hi.
I disconnected myself somehow. I apologize for that. I don't know what happened. So when I was trying to get the caller on, somehow I disconnected myself. So I don't know how that happened. But anyways, there that is. I apologize for that. Yeah. So as we were saying earlier about technology, it's wonderful as long as it works.
Yes, right. That's true. Yeah, I heard him say hi loud and clear, and then I heard nothing. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't even hear that. So somewhere there was a glitch. So sorry about that. So I'm writing that in the chat room. All righty. So the politic thing, wow, you know, it's such, oh, there they are again. So let's try this one more time. Hopefully I won't disconnect myself. So hold on.
Okay.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, hello. And you're calling from Africa. How wonderful. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much. sorry for the first thing that happened. You know what? First of all, I have to appreciate the show, that the show is so international, and that is why Africa should not be left behind.
Yes. Yes. No one should be left behind. It's wonderful to hear from Kenya. That's great.
Thank you. You know what? I am getting so much inspired, so much empowered, and a lot of information that I'm receiving through the show. I have a pen and a paper here, and I'm going through every bit and every notes. And so I am writing them down. But as I am writing this, I'm thinking about my own people here. And I have to congratulate Mark because he is very rich in information. And and ideas, and this is something that we as an Africans need to tap from good people like Mark, so that we also be empowered, because we also need empowerment and the right information and education. And yes. so that is why I think it is very, very much important, because this show, we thank God for the power of technology, but also on the same point, we think that Mark is very, very rich with information that Africa needs to tap from. And so, Mark, is it possible that that you spare your own time one day to come over to Kenya for a conference and for training for outreach, please?
It is possible, yes, if we work it out. My wife is always encouraging me to travel more to places I'm invited. So yes, anything is possible. You can contact New World Library. It's newworldlibrary.com, and we could work something out maybe.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I will put my email address on the timeline, on the chat room, and then as well you can also post your email address there so that I start this conversation through email. Is that okay with you?
That's fine. Yes. That's fine.
and finally, I want to encourage everybody listening across United States of America, through Europe, through Asia, that we are one. We are one, and we are as a family, and this show is just perfect. This is one of the shows of its kind. This show is for inspiration and for everything that we need for our daily life. I think when you are tuned into this show, then you are at the right place. Thank you so much for... Thank you so much.
Oh, I am delighted. Thank you for saying that. Finally,
as I end the call, you said my Mark has got some books, like materials?
Yes.
I am not sure, but we can follow up that with email, but not on air right now. And we see how we can also tap from those right good materials, the resources that we don't have access to.
Well, we need to get our books in Africa, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We have a distributor out of South Africa that gets a lot of our books. They're in English, but they get throughout the African continent. I know we sell in South Africa to this distributor.
Okay. Looks like we lost him, so hopefully he's still listening.
Okay.
Yeah, the
Great.
Call got dropped. But that's really good to know, because I didn't know where your distributors were. And so if he ends up sharing this information in the chat room, I'll be sure and get that information to you, if that's all right with you.
Great. Sure, that's wonderful. Yes.
But, it warms my heart when I hear from people from all around the world, because this is the beauty of tech. This is how technology empowers, because, you know, we can create this community where the earth doesn't feel so huge. I mean, yes, it's huge, but you know what I mean? It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Go ahead.
Yes, it is. It's wonderful to get a call from the other side of the world. It's wonderful.
I know. So there was a phrase in here that I was reading this morning. I was kind of, you know, going through your book, because I have it. I write in it and I highlight, and I love reading your work. And one of the things, it was wonderful advice about getting stuff done. And it was about, you know, being creative. And sometimes we will hem-haw around, or we won't take care of something, or we're not sure how to get started or whatnot. And there was a phrase that it was one of your teachers that said, cut the shit and do the thing.
Yes.
And then walked away. And I thought, you know what, I loved that, because there's things that, you know, procrastinate sometimes.
Right.
And it's interesting. So let's talk about that a little bit here.
that's one of my favorite phrases of all time. I have it on my desk. One of the first things we ever published at New World Library when we just started up was a postcard with that on it. It was from a brilliant man named John Donahue, who's a director and a writer of plays in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He does amazing work. He's a genius. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And I was in one of his plays, and it was a magical play. It was just incredible magic he was making. But he gave me something to say to a kid that I really didn't understand, and I just said to him, and I was maybe 19 or 20 or something, I said, well, what's my motivation for this? Or I don't even remember exactly what I said. But he just looked at me, he said, cut the shit and do the thing. And he walked away, refusing to talk about anything. And I never forgot that. And it would come to mind whenever I'd get stuck with a certain project, or me too, you can start getting too elaborate, like say a book project can just grow and just become so vast, or any project, you can bog down somewhere in the middle if it's a big project. And then his words just come to my mind. It's like a mantra. Just do the thing. There is a season for everything. There's a time when we're upset or irritated or frustrated to really plunge into the center of those emotions and explore them. And there's a time to just cut the shit and do the thing. Just take the steps, the next obvious steps in front of you. There's a season for everything. There really is time to do therapy. And a lot of this book is about being able to face our deepest, darkest fears. And that's really good. Then there's another time to just get on with your work. Do the work. Do the work in front of you. Take the next obvious step and move forward with whatever projects you have chosen for yourself.
Yeah, and you know, and it doesn't have to be huge leaps and bounds, too. It's the little steps, the little things that add up. It's like, okay, so I'm going to use my home for an example. You know, for a while, and by the way, I've used a lot of the meditations that you and Shakti have taught over the years that I use in my personal life. So when I went through my second divorce, I was on the cusp of losing the house. I didn't know how I was going to take care of my children because, you know, my ex-husband basically walked out. He left us. And I needed to figure out how to financially take care of my kids. And one of the things that I had to keep focusing on was that it's everything will come as it needs to come. And I can't remember all the other – I just made up my own stuff so that worked for me.
Right.
And it took time. It's like I would lay in bed because I would be so, like, I didn't even know where to start. So I would just lay there and say thank you. That's all I could say was just thank you. Thank you, because in this moment I knew that some way, somehow, something would manifest and it would all blossom. Well, after, you know, and I had to work for what I have now. It wasn't like I didn't do vision boards. I didn't do all this meditation and, oh, it's just going to wish and it's going to come to me. I had to work my tushy off and get really resourceful and get really smart about my situation and no longer be the victim in it. And I managed to save the house. He signed it over. You know, I got the loans, modified.
Great.
All of these things happened, but it took like a year to get to this place. But there were times that I'd feel so distraught that that's the only thing I could do was just lay there and say thank you. Because I was breathing. And so I just wanted to bring that up because sometimes people are in that place. They feel so stuck or they just don't know what to do.
Yes.
And maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
That's a powerful, powerful practice you did. I'm so glad it's entered into sort of the group consciousness, the concept of focusing on the half-full part of the glass rather than the half-empty. By just saying thank you, even though you feel totally overwhelmed and frustrated and you have all these feelings coming, if you're saying thank you, you're focusing on the full half of the glass. And what we focus on expands in our lives. If we spend so much time looking at what's not working, feeling frustrated, looking at the half-empty part of the glass, that just expands in our lives. If we can find something to say thank you about, and you found it just thank you for breathing. I'm alive. I'm breathing. Yeah. You know, that's wonderful. That's a powerful practice that you did.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And it doesn't, you know, I personally, you know, I've gone to seminars, you know, I spent money that I didn't have to go to seminars, and it did help me. Don't get me wrong, it did help me. But it was really a challenge for me, but I discovered what kind of moxie I had to,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of recreate my life. And so the last 4 years, I've been in this process of reevaluating, recreating, I hate to use the term reinvention because, you know, I'm already here. I'm not inventing myself. I'm morphing. I'm changing.
Right. That's for sure. Yeah. I love the phrase cultural creatives. I met this guy, Paul Ray, who wrote a book called Cultural Creatives. And he said, there's basically three broad types of people in the world, you could say. There's the traditionalists who find their answers and their support and their strength within some kind of established tradition. And that's fine for them if it really works. If these, as I say in Tantra for the West, if these traditions dissolve more neuroses than they create, then they're very good. But as soon as any tradition or teacher or path or book or any or form of therapy, whatever, or group, as soon as it creates more neuroses than it dissolves, then it's time to leave and move on to something else. So there's the traditionalists and who find their strength from a tradition. There's the materialists who mistakenly think that having more stuff, being more successful, making more money will solve their problems. And that's a huge part of the global population now, the people that just think having a better job, getting more stuff, that's the way to build a successful life. It's not true. Whether they succeed and end up making more money or not, they'll end up frustrated if they don't attain their material goals. And if they do attain their material goals, they'll end up frustrated because they'll realize they bring no satisfaction whatsoever.
Right.
So there's the materialist.
Right.
And then there's what he calls the cultural creatives. And that's what there are more and more cultural creatives, the people that are daring to, and it takes courage, really. It takes strength, daring to look at every possibility and really find out what works for them and find their own unique path and unique way and be very creative with all the lifestyle possibilities we have and all the possibility of different traditions and different things to believe. And we're cultural creatives. So each one of us is on our own absolutely unique path. It doesn't do me any good to imitate anyone else's path. We're unique, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of finding our own unique path. And within that, at some point, we end up finding our own inner teacher. We find our own inner guidance. I realized all these exercises through Tantra for the West, they're all just about connecting with this inner teacher. From the very first one, the very first exercise is simply to sit with whatever you're feeling at the moment and ask yourself, what am I feeling? And then whatever answer arises, you say, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then you even say, okay, what am I telling myself? What's going through my mind? And you repeat those thoughts. And you say, thank you. And then as you do this little exercise, you realize we all have this conscious awareness within. We all have this inner field of awareness that is aware and wise and even peaceful at its core, that can observe all of the emotions that arise and all of the thoughts that come and go. And once we learn to just connect with that conscious awareness, we can even start asking ourselves questions, and then we get answers, and they're answers that arise from this place deep within us that's beyond thought. And that's the best guidance for all of us, the guidance that comes from within when we ask for it. Ask and you shall receive.
Mm-hmm. And now the challenging part, though, is what I'm seeing is helping others understand this. And that's why, you know, this work is so valuable. This work is so important. And I think also people need to be willing to want to learn this. And it's like, you know, when we were talking earlier about the political stuff and how, you know, being able to, being willing to listen and negotiate, that right there is such a big thing because, like, you know, the interaction I was sharing with you earlier on online, these people were not willing to listen to my view of why I even shared what I shared. They were so upset and so adamant on just their side that they, it's like a brick wall. They shut it out. And I think that's the hardest part about helping this world heal is when people shut down or they shut it out or they don't want to respond or listen. So maybe you can share some ideas on how, I don't want to use the term break through their barriers because that's not what I'm wanting to do. I think what I'm trying to get at is the most effective way to plant a positive seed because hopefully that seed will take root and, you know, everybody has their own path, as like you were saying, but I think it would be helpful because the world, there's so much controversy and violence and anger and pain and angst and frustration in the world and people are obsessed with it sometimes and so I'd love to get your input on how do we shift that.
That's a really good question. I think it's an essential one to ask in the world today. I know in Tantra for the West and the politics, and I know I quote the single book that really most influenced me in terms of thinking politically is called The Power of Partnership by Rhianne Eisler. She had written a book called The Chalice and the Blade years ago that's in a lot of universities. And the chalice meaning the chalice, the cup of partnership, and the blade meaning the blade of domination and exploitation. And she shows and takes it much further in the power of partnership, showing us that we are in partnership with everyone on Earth, whether we want to be or not. We're here together. And if we realize we have a partnership, then we can make it work. And many people will not realize this. So the best thing we can do is create as many partnerships as we can and have the best, most beautiful, most expansive life we can. And so then people will look at us and say, I want what they have. I want that kind of inner peace and happiness. But ultimately, partnership is more powerful. Working with other people with respect and working to come to some kind of win-win agreements with every dispute is far more powerful in the long run than any form of domination and exploitation. Because any attempts at domination and exploitation, whether by one country to another or one individual to another, leads to nothing but ongoing resentment and pain and even eventually violence. There's violence as a possibility. Oh. And violence does not solve anything, obviously. So ultimately, partnership is more powerful in the long run. And it's the only solution. You can't force other people to change. And many of them, like many of the racists in this country, and I'm sure around the world, we kind of just have to wait for them to die because they're not going to change. But their children are changing. Children are born naturally open and loving, and if we just don't mess with them, that's the hope for the future.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talked about on, I'm going to shift gears a little bit, kind of, sort of, about education and creativity. And it's like, you know, and I was reading some of the, you know, because there are experiences, people of kids especially, they go to school and they feel like, you know, they have to sit there for hours on end and learn all this stuff. And I have to say, you know, as a mother, you know, my kids, my kids have had teachers that were incredibly encouraging of the creative side, and they found the strengths of my children and worked with them on that and tried to incorporate that with the other things that they needed to learn because, you know, it's public school. There are state mandated stuff that they've got to learn, you know. I expect my children to be able to read and write and do math. My kids have diabetes, so it's vital that they learn how to do math. But
yes.
Yeah, so but the thing is is encouraging children to not lose their creative spark, whatever form of education that they're getting. And I just wanted to inject that it's not just up to the teachers to do this stuff. The parents need to take a role and not just expect the teachers to raise their children for them. And I've seen this, and it's heartbreaking.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, you got to be part of it. You're part of your
oh,
child's
yeah.
life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I often think school, it should be, I mean, in a way, we've got something backwards. We need to teach reading and writing and arithmetic. That's true. And
right.
in those instances, yes, the teachers know the information. The kids don't. And that's the process of school. But some of the time, it could even be every Friday or every Monday and Friday. It'd be wonderful to turn the tables, because what education really should be, and I think what happens then with our books, the stuff we're publishing at New World Library, and it's what education should be, which is for the teacher to say to the students, every one of you is a creative genius. Mm-hmm. Every one of you has, just within your being, because you're human, you have something you're passionate about and something you want to do. Let's find what that is, and let me support you in doing that. Let me support you in realizing your dreams and in finding where you're really creative and what excites you. How can I support you in doing that? That's what good education is. A good teacher doesn't teach what they know or what they feel is the best way to be. They encourage the student to discover within themselves the best way to be, the best life for them, how to fulfill their dreams.
You know, I have to say, I think I've gotten very, very fortunate with the school that my kids are in. It's a K-8, and my oldest is starting high school next year, which I'm thrilled and terrified at the same time, because he's growing up. He's taller than me, finally. But one of the things that I've personally been extremely grateful for is how their teachers over the years have been encouraging of their gifts. And so, like, my oldest son, he wants to become an engineer. He's a whiz at math and science, and he loves those things. And so the Seattle Public School District, through a program that they have, are offering some summer school classes, and they're free. I don't have to pay for it. So he's going to take, starting in another week or two, an intro to engineering, to give him an idea of this is what you could be learning if this is the path that you want to take. And so I'm, as a mother, of course, I'm encouraging this, because I want him to have that early education, as it were. And my youngest, I think he's going to be a gearhead. He loves cars. He loves old cars. This child, he's 10 years old, and he can rattle off all sorts of stuff about transmissions and whatnot. And I have no idea what he's talking about, but he's having a wonderful time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
So it's like all of these wonderful things, and it's like I'm so grateful for that. And then I'll hear about other schools where they're not as open on that stuff, and it's saddening. So this is why I was mentioning that, you know, about the parents. It's like, you know, take a vital role. I'm a single mom. I have to work. I've got other things that I have to do, but I'm doing my best to help support my children in what they want to accomplish.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you. So let's talk about, we've got about 16 minutes left of the show. Let's talk about the topic of money. Of course, you know, when people read Tantra, and I know we discussed a little bit of the thing, people immediately think of the whole sex and relationships and all of that stuff. But this is why I want to talk about these other things, because that's what this is. This is a direct path to living the life of your dreams, is the title of your book, but it encompasses everything. So let's talk about money and how you know, people are either grumble and complain that they're broke, or they could have $7,000 in the bank and still feel broke. And so let's discuss that. Yeah.
Yes. When you just look at every moment of your life as part of your spiritual path, then it does include money. And I give some powerful techniques for shifting attitudes about money. I spent my 20s and into my early 30s having very little money, and money was often a struggle. And then I turned that all around by 34 or 35. I completely turned it around. And I did it through looking at my anxiety around money, doing exactly what I talk about in Tantra, really examining. I had started my own company at 30, knowing nothing about business. I started the publishing company, and it was a real struggle for the first 4 years because of my deep beliefs and conflicts around money. And finally, I hit my financial low. I was $65,000 in credit card debt, and this was the early 80s, so it was a lot of money in today's dollars. And a lot of that I put into the company. The company was nearly bankrupt because our distributor went bankrupt and didn't pay us for 6 months of sales. So we were on the edge of bankruptcy. And I remember this anxiety that was nearly constant around then in my stomach. I think I was heading for an ulcer if I wouldn't have really gotten into it and resolved it. And one day, I remember I was driving down the freeway. I was going to a bank. I'd been given a credit card, another new credit card, and I was surviving by getting new cards, getting a cash advance, and paying off the minimums of all the old cards. So I didn't even have enough income to pay my credit card minimums.
Right.
I was paying way more in credit card payments than I was in rent or anything else.
Oh my gosh.
And I realized driving down the freeway, I had a lot of anxiety. So I started getting into it, diving into the center of the poison, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what is going on? Well, my stomach is churning. What is the feeling? Well, it's this energy, it's this anxiety that won't allow me to relax. It's this ongoing uptightness. And I got into it, and I said, okay, what am I telling myself? Well, I was telling myself that I'm out of control financially. I was even telling myself I was a fool with money. A fool and his money are soon parted. And that's the phrase I identified with. Without knowing it, I was programming my own brain with these thoughts for bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even have the thought occasionally from the Bob Marley song, Someday the Bottom Will Fall Out, would come
mm-hmm.
into my mind in my anxiety. Someday it's all going to crash. What was I doing? Every thought, every word programs our deep subconscious mind. I was programming myself into bankruptcy. And I finally realized that, driving down the freeway. This anxiety, I was preparing myself for more anxiety and bankruptcy. And so I finally got down to really examining my feelings and thoughts and saying, what am I telling myself? What do I really believe? What's my deep underlying belief? And what came up once I started this question and answer with myself that I talk about in the book, the value of just learning to dialogue with ourselves? What came up was, oh, I believed I'm a fool with money. I'm out of control. I just don't understand money. Some people do. Some people don't. I don't. That's why I'm a financial failure. That was my belief. Once I nailed that belief in those simple words, I'm a fool with money, out of control,
mm-hmm.
I found an affirmation that directly contradicted that and contradicted that. I came up with, while driving down the freeway, I said, okay, I want to change that belief. I want to come to believe I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. That was the affirmation I came up with. I pulled over onto the shoulder of the freeway and wrote it down because I knew I'd forget it. But I ended up writing it down like 5 different times, posting it all over. I put it on my bathroom mirror. I put it on my wall right in front of my face and over my desk. I carried it around with me. And whenever that anxiety would arise again, I'd start affirming, I'm sensible and in control of my finances now. I'm creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. That single affirmation turned my life around financially. Within a few months, I realized, well, we need another distributor. I went and got another distributor that paid us on time. And another person joined us as bookkeeper that became a great financial manager that really showed me how to have some financial controls in my company and keep costs down and make a profit. So within a few months, we became a profitable company and have been ever since.
That is amazing. And, you know, and that's the whole thing is that you took I'm so glad you shared that because the thing, you took ownership of where you were at. You didn't blame the market. You didn't blame the economy. You didn't blame, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It wasn't right. All of this outside stuff. You turned in, and I cannot express how vital that is. I mean, one of my favorite things that you said in here that I've been using is my income exceeds my expenses.
Yes.
And that one,
I'm
personally using that one because I'm in this place where I'm still shifting, you know, like since the divorce, you know, I had to pay for my own divorce. I had to, you know, I had to jump through a lot of hoops to help keep a roof over our heads. And I've had
mm-hmm.
to, you know, swallow, to eat some humble pie and ask for family for help just to buy groceries for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm in this place where I'm shifting all of that because I'm paying off these credit cards and I'm taking care of these things. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I'm still in the process of cleaning up this mess and that it's
mm-hmm.
going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
You know, the whole simple thing about saying thank you. You know, granted, I don't have a bajillion bucks in the bank, but that's okay because I've got a roof and I've got food. I've got a garden where I can go pick vegetables if I want to. You know, I mean, there's like
mm-hmm.
abundance comes in many, many, many forms. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That is a question I asked people. Do we live in an abundant universe or is there scarcity? Well, the universe is totally abundant.
Yeah.
It's vast. I walk out, I have this huge pine tree in my yard that has
mm-hmm.
thousands and thousands and thousands of pine cones every year just scatters to the wind.
Yeah.
Thousands. Total abundance. We live in a totally abundant universe.
Yep.
And
yep.
we can all just tap into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all inner work. And yeah, you nailed it. Yeah, it doesn't do any good blaming other people, blaming the economy, blaming anything external. No, we look
mm-hmm.
within. What do I mm-hmm. believe? Do I really believe it's an abundant universe?
Mm-hmm.
Is it or isn't it? You know,
right. Yeah, it's such a powerful thing. And I know for me personally, it helped me. Because if I started feeling blue or kind of down, like, oh, my gosh, I'm failing or any of that stuff, I would have to really snap myself, as it were, like a rubber band on the wrist and remind myself that everything is going to be okay. I mean, I remember being, you know, homeless and thinking I was wealthy by being able to buy a taco at Taco Bell because that was, like, all the money I had. And I would eat that taco and I would be so grateful just for that one little thing. And
mm-hmm.
it's like there was one time I went to, this is when I was still living in that shelter, and this has been like almost 20 years ago, it was down in Tacoma, and I went to a food festival there. Now imagine going to a food festival where you're smelling all of these foods and you have no money to
no
buy
money.
Anything. No money. And so through the whole thing I'm walking through this festival. And I was probably the happiest person there because I couldn't buy anything, but I was enjoying the experience. And I kept imagining, like, this, my life is filled with abundance. And I would say things like that to myself over and over. And, you know, and it didn't take long, I mean, before I got a job and I was able to start taking care of myself. And then I got a settlement from an insurance thing because I was in a car accident, got my own apartment. I mean, it's like all of these little things, these stepping stones to get to where I'm at now. And it's like, sometimes, you know, life can hit you with a ton of bricks, but you have to sit there and say, just say thank you, like we were expressing earlier, just thank you, I'm breathing. I can do something today about this, you know,
mm-hmm.
even if it's just take a walk around the neighborhood and watch the birds play. I mean, something.
Wonderful,
you know?
Yes. Yes, yes, an attitude of gratitude. And
mm-hmm.
and look at that full half of the glass. We all have it. And the more whatever we think about expands.
Mm.
Somebody, when I was talking, it's some talk I had, a big crowd at some place, and I remember I said some lengthy sentence, and one guy just yelled out, "What we think about expands." And I said, "That's exactly it. That just sums up in a few words what I just taken 5 minutes to say, you know." And I love that. What we think about expands. Yes,
yeah.
Right, exactly. If we focus on the problem, and especially what other people are doing to us or how messed up the world is, that gets us nowhere. Mm-hmm. We know what the problem is. I'm not saying don't recognize the problem or be in denial of it or anything. No. We get what the problem is very quickly. But then
right.
we shift our thinking. Within this problem, there are opportunities always. As Napoleon Hill said, within every adversity, there are benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And even the ancient teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, going back 5,000 years, in there it said, even in the knocks of life, we can find great gifts. Well, I literally wrote those three things down and put them up on my wall. When I hit my financial low, I had, mm-hmm. within our problems are opportunities, within our adversities are benefits, within the knocks of life are great gifts. And I put benefits, opportunities, and gifts in big words.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally started asking myself whenever a new problem would arise, okay, I recognize the problem, yes. I'm not running from it. I'm not denying it. This is a problem. We have no money. We're going broke. Okay, that's a problem. What are the benefits of this situation? What are the opportunities? I even asked myself, what are the opportunities in nearly going bankrupt? And when I asked myself, I got some answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I keep saying in Tantra for the West. Keep asking yourself questions and you get answers. I got some great answers. And you had zeroed in on one. One answer I got when I said, what's the benefit in nearly being bankrupt? I saw, well, you've been looking for someone else to come along and run the company. You've been thinking that you're too young and too inexperienced, and you've been looking for someone else to take your hand and show you what to do. That person hasn't come along. You have to be that person. You have
right.
to take total responsibility for the company you started. The buck has to stop with you. You've got to
mm-hmm.
make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then then the next thought, obviously, well, I need a new distributor that pays me. Oh, yeah. So some real practical steps. Okay, I called. I made a few phone calls, and
yeah.
within a half an hour, I had a new distributor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about taking ownership and then taking action. You can't just wish for it. You know, I get so tired of, you know, I'll hear these things, oh, I just wish for it, or, you know, I'm going to think positive today, and I'm like, oh, it's so much more than that. It's so much more than that. I mean, sometimes if that's where you've got to start, though, that's good, but
yeah.
there has to be more than that. There has to be action.
Yes.
You know, a seed isn't going to grow unless, you know, it needs the sun, it needs the water, and it has to break through its shell, and it's got to get through the dirt, and it's got to get through all of this stuff in order to become this beautiful plant. And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't just wish for itself to be that way.
Right.
And so much in life is like that.
Right.
Excellent.
Think positive, but take the next obvious step in front of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My goodness. Thank you, Mark. I absolutely love having you on my show. I love your work, and I am so grateful for what you do, and what you and Shakti created was just really amazing. I mean, you guys have some wonderful books, and I really love interviewing your authors. Everyone is such a beautiful gem, you know, and the wisdom that is brought to the world. It's wonderful, and I share your books on my website, too, because I want people to buy them. You know,
wonderful.
Good stuff.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're most welcome. So we've got just a few seconds left, and I just wanted to ask you, what would you suggest to our listeners to empower their lives right now?
Just take a deep breath and relax from head to toe. Let all thought go for a moment and just celebrate the wonder of who you are in this wonderful, miraculous universe filled with life.
I love it. Simple is as simple does. That's one of my favorite mottos, too. Thank you. You know, there's so much empowerment in that. So, everyone, all healing and empowerment begins from within, and I need your help to do that. Please go to my link at projectempowerment.info and favorite this show. Leave a message or contact me direct at kathleenmmillick.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you again, Mark, and everyone have the most amazing day. Bye-bye, everyone.